We're going to talk about a subject tonight that may not be as applicable. Well, it isn't as applicable to some in the audience as it is to others. If you do not have children, or you have had children and it's been many years since you had them at home, you may think that the lesson is not as valuable to you. But whatever counsel you may give to others about our topic tonight needs to be biblical counsel. And whatever views you may have about people who practice what we're going to discuss tonight, which is discipline of children, need to be views that will be encouraging in the right direction and never harmful and discouraging. So even if you don't have children, I hope that you'll pay attention and be able to benefit from our study tonight. We're going to begin our study in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 10. It's a passage that really has nothing to do specifically with raising children, but I want to begin with that as a foundational text. And we're going to come back to this at the end of our lesson, if the Lord is willing. Moses is preaching to the people, and throughout this sermon, he over and over and over again talks about the commandments of God, the statutes of God, the judgments of God, encouraging the people to respect and obey them. But he makes a statement here in verse 13 is recorded. He said that to keep the Lord's commandments and His statutes, which I'm commanding you today, note, for your good. Every one of the commandments. I don't understand all the commandments in Exodus, in Leviticus, in Deuteronomy. What I do know is, whether I understand them or do not understand them, the commandments that God gave Israel was for their good. That's a foundational concept in being willing to accept and abide by the instruction and the commandments that God gave. Now, applying that to our study tonight, go to the book of Proverbs, chapter 3. Proverbs, chapter 3. I just want to read a couple verses at the beginning here that mention the concept of discipline. Proverbs, chapter 3, verse 11. Chapter 3, verse 11, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe His reproof. Immediately you see that discipline may be something unpleasant and that people may not take well. And the admonition is against that, to realize that if the Lord disciplines you, it is for your good. And then he makes application to the point we want to talk about tonight. For whom the Lord loves, He reproves, even as, by way of comparison, even as a father corrects the son in whom he delights. So, just like the Father in heaven disciplines us because He loves us, a loving father, interested in the welfare of his children, will correct or discipline them. And so discipline is given a very high place here when it's compared to how God treats His children. And ought never to be spoken of disparagingly when it is understood and administered the way God intended it to be. The second passage is in chapter 13 and then verse 24. Chapter 13, verse 24. We have a proverb in our language that's not in the Bible, spare the rod and spoil the child. This is a similar concept. Maybe we borrowed it from the book of Proverbs and rephrased it. I don't know. But be that as it may, in verse 24, he who withholds his rod hates his son. But he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Again, discipline here is associated with a loving parent, not a hating parent. I realize sometimes parents do things under the banner of discipline, that are not love at all. They're simply out of frustration. They're simply out of selfishness. They're simply out of really dislike of the child. That's not what we're talking about, not what the Bible is talking about. The word discipline is related to the word disciple, where our word comes from. It's related to that. And a disciple is a learner. And so if we can keep in mind that what the Bible is talking about when it talks about discipline is doing the kind of things that instruct, that mold character, that train. And that's what we're going to be talking about in our study tonight. What happens sometimes even among good parents is that there's a failure, a neglect. I don't know if it's an aversion because of something they've seen on television or something they've read in a book or something their friends have said. Maybe it's a reaction to the bad, quote-unquote, discipline that goes on in our society. And so sometimes parents do not exercise much discipling discipline, negative instruction, negative enforcement. And that is detrimental. Look at some passages in Proverbs, chapter 22, verse 15. If you want to do an interesting study in the book of Proverbs, do a study on the word folly or foolishness. And you'll find that he's not talking about a kid being a two-year-old. That's not what he's talking about. He's not talking even about a grown person sometimes acting like a kid just to have fun with the kids. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about attitudes and conduct that rejects wisdom and guidance and is destructive to not only one's character and morals, but to society and to one's fellow man. Just go study the word folly or foolishness in the book. Very interesting. Now, with that background, we read their verse here, 15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. And of course, parents that don't understand what the book of Proverbs is talking about may misuse a verse like this to justify disciplining a child who's just being a child, being silly, having fun. That's not what this verse is talking about. It's a shameful misuse of it. But rather, when a child exercises or shows, and they will, the kind of foolishness that's in the book of Proverbs, the rod of discipline can help mold and make that child. And the parent that ignores it or tries to only use positive reinforcement instead of discipline may well injure the character, fail to mold and make the character of that child. In chapter 29 and 15, one of the things, I guess, most every parent, can I say, or maybe I just should say every parent, has to deal with, and it's different with each child, but is the problem of selfishness and stubbornness, and along with that sometimes the failure to simply respect authority. And what happens if a child is not trained not to indulge those things when they get to be 20 or 25 or 30, those same characteristics of selfishness and stubbornness and lack of respect for authority demonstrate themselves, well, even in their years in school, toward a teacher, then when they get grown, toward a mate, and then toward their employer. But all of these problems often stem from the fact that when they were children, they were not disciplined against that kind of behavior and attitude. Look at verse 15. The rod and reproof. And note these go hand in hand. We said discipline is related to discipling. You see that here. The rod is not just the rod, but the rod and reproof. So instructing, teaching the child what's wrong through the act of discipline. Give wisdom. But a child, now the way this version translates it, who gets his own way, your verb may say, left to himself. No, just let him alone. Let him do what he wants. We've got a phrase in our society, boys will be boys. And so just let them go. No, boys can be good boys. And here he says, a child left to himself or gets his own way brings shame to his mother. And a child needs to learn when he's young, you don't get your way. And if mom or dad says something, you don't have to understand why. The point is, you respect authority. And they're not allowed to demonstrate in stubbornness and selfishness. And so the molding of the child, and when the child don't get that, they lose out some very valuable training. In chapter 23, although this verse is before the one we just read in the book of Proverbs, I wanted to put it afterwards because there's a number of verses in Proverbs about discipline we could read. We're not going to. But this verse kind of sums up, I guess, how important this is. Verse 13, chapter 23:13. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. By the way, that tells me discipline is sometimes rather severe. We've got parents in here who knows what it is to train children. I look out at this audience. We've got several white-headed guys and women who are older. I'm not going to say white-headed, okay? But they've raised children. And they discipline their children. And I think their children receive some pretty diligent, severe discipline. And to my knowledge, those parents who raised those children have not had to deal with these children being violent, shooting up schools, those kind of things. Not talking about, you know, people say, you do that, you strike a child, then the child will want to be violent. That's hogwash is what that is. And he says, you strike him with the rod, whatever you want to take that to mean, it's discipline and it's diligent discipline. And it says that he won't die. He might think he's going to die. He's not going to die. And if you do it right, you will not injure that child. These parents that are in this audience have not caused any permanent injury to their children by the discipline they administered. And so you shall strike him with the rod. Now look at this last phrase. And rescue his soul from Sheol. Well, discipline is not going to keep him from dying physically. So I think rather he has a larger concept in mind. There's the death in the book of Proverbs is opposite to the idea of life, healthy living, and certainly being right with God. And so if you want to deliver your child, you want to rescue your child, you don't wait till they're in jail. You don't wait till they're in trouble at school. You start rescuing them when you first have them and they're able to respond to your discipline. And so you rescue your child's soul from Sheol. Turn to Ephesians 6:4. I don't know how much the parents in Ephesus knew about godly discipline. They were brought up in a pagan society. And it's interesting, you know, I said at the beginning of the lesson that there may be people in this audience that have no children and say, okay, I can take my nap now. I hope you don't do that. But here is a letter to the church at Ephesus to be read in the church at Ephesus, and you would have in that church people who were not fathers and mothers and grandmothers and grandfathers. And yet it's included in the letter for the church. And you have verse 4, fathers. Do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction. Those two words go together. Discipline and instruction of the Lord. So here's the moral and spiritual training of a child. And so we talked in our lesson this morning about how we spend our time. And men get busy, busy with work, busy with the yard, busy with car, busy with sports, busy with this and that. But he says, fathers, you need never to be so busy that you're not molding your child through discipline and instruction, moral and spiritual training. And fathers, if we're too busy to do that, you know what? We're too busy. We better reorder our schedule because your children need it, and it's your responsibility and mine as parents to mold the character of that child. And you know, when you talk about discipline. If you manifest the right attitude and do it as God intended it, one of the secondary lessons, but a very important one, is that your child grows up seeing the value of discipline. They might not at the time. They say, I could get along without this real well. But later when they get older and they see what this has done for them, they'll be thankful for it, that they had parents who loved them enough and had enough wisdom and concern to train them. And it will help them in understanding their role to their children, so you do not perpetuate a bad situation, but hopefully perpetuate a good situation for the years to come. Turn to 1 Corinthians 14. Now, I mentioned to you in the lesson this morning, you know, you wonder sometimes, why do you preach what you preach? And I told you the lesson this morning, born out of observations about myself and how easy it is to misuse our time. And in this recent trip that I was on, of course, we attended a congregation in another city, in another state. And it was good. It was a good assembly, a good lesson. But you obviously cannot help but observing some of the things that go on in an assembly like that. And like there was a young woman in the assembly with a couple of children. And as far as I know, fine family, good young woman. I have no reason to think anything otherwise. But she had a young little boy about 3 years old, something like that. And it was pretty obvious to both my wife and I, if we know anything about raising children, that she really didn't understand about discipline, that child. And as a result, that child made noise and whimpered and gave her trouble. And she was out and in and out and in and out and in. And I don't know how much of the assembly she was able to participate in. Now, I want to stop just a moment. You may be a good parent and very attentive to trying to train and discipline your children and still have to go out and in and out and in. And if you want to know about that, talk to my wife. Because about the time we thought we knew something about child rearing, we had our third child. And the Lord said, look, you don't know half of what you think you do. And so she wore out the carpet going out and in and out and in. But she didn't tolerate it. And he's a fine Christian man today. But so I don't want to say anything to make the mothers or the fathers in this audience feel bad that when your child misbehaves, you have to go out and exercise some discipline. And you may have to bring them back in a few minutes. You may have to go out again. In fact, that's to be commended if when you do, you exercise discipline. Why did I turn to 1 Corinthians 14? Here's why. I look at two verses. One is verse 26. He's talking about their assembly and how this assembly can accomplish the purposes that God intended. There, they were exercising spiritual gifts, and among those gifts was the gift of tongues, that is, speaking other languages. And he said, verse 26, what is the outcome then, brethren? When you assemble, each one has a psalm, has a teaching, has a revelation, has a tongue, has an interpretation. Here's the bottom line, the last statement in the verse. Let all things be done for edification. If you study the chapter, that word edification, you will know that edification means more than being there. It means more than, oh, there's other Christians here. Edification in this chapter has to do with understanding what's being said and benefiting from that. And so he's saying, whatever these gifts are, they have to accord with this basic principle that the exercise of those is to be done so as people can understand and be built up and strengthened through the things that are being taught or sung or revealed, whatever the case may be. And verse 40 goes hand in hand with that. All things must be done properly and in an orderly manner. Why? So that, verse 26, people will be edified. And so, in an assembly, I guess this is an extreme, but I'm going to give you an illustration of a failure and how it affects an assembly. Many years ago, I was preaching in Highlands, Texas. We had a gospel meeting. And there was an older preacher holding the meeting, well, renowned man. And it was a morning lesson. And there was a mother in the audience that had a boy. They only had one child. They didn't really understand how to raise children. Be that as it may. This boy would stand up and squeal and carry on, and this preacher put up with it for a while. Finally, he just stopped. He said, "Ma'am, I come a long way here to preach, and if you can't control that child, you need to take him out." Something like that. Well, it made her mad. I don't think she came back to the meeting. But the point was, nobody else could get anything out of it. And the guy was right. If she can't control the child, she didn't need to take him out. And so sometimes I know children test you to the limit. But the point is, an assembly is to be edifying. And so discipline interferes with what God designed this whole thing for. If every parent just let their children do what they want, how would you be edified in an assembly? It'd be difficult. Now, I want to hasten to add, I know there are parents in this audience, sometimes you think, "Brother, I don't know how mothers sometimes get anything out of worship." But I'm going to tell you what, I'm glad you're here. We could have an assembly where there's never a child making a noise, never a child crying, if we had all 60-year-olds and up. I've seen churches like that. The 60-year-olds were the young people. I'm glad we have parents with young children that have to fight with them and try to make them be quiet and try to make them mad. I'm not complaining about that. And that's going to be just part of raising children. Please don't misunderstand me. But when that conduct is continued throughout the course of a class or an assembly for worship, that's when there's a failure to discipline. And the effect of it is upon you. Because you're not being edified in the class or the assembly. And look, as far as I know, there's no period of time that God allowed. Say, okay, now for the next 6 or 10 or 15 years, you don't have to grow in Christ. You don't have to learn anything because you're raising children. That doesn't work. You need to be edified, mother, father. You need to be edified. And so if there's a failure to discipline and there's not the ability to be edified, if there's no order, you're impacted as well as others in the assembly are impacted as well. And I see that as a negative effect on failure to discipline. Yes, the child is affected. We talked about that. But this is a peripheral but a very important effect of the failure to discipline. So not only does the failure to discipline affect the assemblies of people in class, whether class or worship, to accomplish the purposes that God intended, but there's another effect, and I think sometimes a rather tragic effect of the failure to exercise discipline, and that is it disrupts a peaceful, orderly, loving family. You know what Genesis 2:18 says, so you can just hold it and turn to the next passage, that Adam was alone. God said, "It's not good. I will make a helper for him." And then you know the rest of the story, that God created the woman and brought her to the man. And the relationship that the Bible later calls marriage was formed for this man and this woman to spend time together. Now, man had animals that he could have spent time with, but they would not satisfy the needs that he had, the moral needs, the social needs, the spiritual needs, and so woman was made. And so this companionship, just to share life, somebody that he could talk to, somebody he could share his dreams with, his sorrows with, his hopes with, etc. And thus marriage, as God intended it. Look at Ecclesiastes 9:9. You may not be as familiar with this one, although we did read it this morning. I want to mention it again. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life which is given you under the sun. Folks, I'm convinced that there are families where a man cannot enjoy his wife They can't enjoy one another because the kids are wild, they're uncontrolled, they rule the roost, they do what they want, when they want, if they want to shout, if they want to run, if they don't want to behave, they do what they want, and parents are at their wits' end, and maybe the parents are at one another's throats, which we'll talk about in just a moment, and there's no peace and order. And a side effect is, what is it doing to the husband-wife relationship? Husbands and wives need peaceful atmosphere, time to just enjoy one another. And children need to learn that their parents need that and respect it. You know, it's interesting to me, back in Genesis 2:24, when God set up this relationship we call marriage, or sometimes we just call it the home. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, there's a statement: "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife. The two shall become one flesh." Leave father and mother and cleave to his wife. I don't think he's talking about geography, that they can't live in the same state or the same city or the same neighborhood. I think he's talking about a psychological break. That as much as you love your mother and daddy, there's a stronger tie that should be between a husband and a wife. And that should be in a family. And children need to learn that. That while mom and daddy love you, they ought to learn that they love one another more. Now, at least I wasn't ashamed to tell my children that. And to tell them that I know the time would come when they would be out of the house. They better. I wanted them out. But there would be this woman who would be holding my hand and going through life with me. And so if children are the focus of everything, and their lives rule everything that goes on in the family, and there's no time for husbands and wives just to sit down and talk and enjoy one another, and maybe just sit on the couch together and put their arms around one another, just something peaceful, and tell those kids to sit down and be quiet or something, they need to learn to do that and respect mother and daddy and the relationship that they have, if I understand God's plan. But not only just the husband and wife enjoying one another. Look at Deuteronomy 6:12. We talked about this passage in our lesson this morning as well. And he said, I said 6:12. It's chapter 6, verse 6. I'm sorry. "These words which I'm commanding you today should be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house." You know, if children are disruptive, if they never learn to sit down and be quiet and be attentive, how can you sit down and talk to them about the Bible? How can you have a Bible discussion? Whose job is it to teach them that? And if they won't listen or they don't want to, where's discipline? They need to learn, first of all, by your example, that you take time to study. You need to grow. They need to see your example. And then they can learn by that the things they need to learn. That is, to study, to set some quiet time for Bible study. And certainly as a parent tries to teach his child, that demands some kind of discipline in order for that to be done. There's families that I've been around, I don't know how they could ever have any kind of a Bible study. And then there's this problem that here there's a subject we're talking about that oftentimes husbands and wives or mothers and fathers don't agree on. Maybe one of the persons, the husband or the wife, the father or the mother, was brought up in a very strict conservative home where discipline was exercised strictly. And the other was brought up in a home where it was very loose, if any. And so now they've formed a family together. Now they've got children. How do we raise our children? And so you've got 15, 20 years, 25 years of tradition and family culture that come in conflict. Guess what? discord. And there is discord in families over this issue. I know there is. I've heard it. I've seen it. We've had people talk to us about it. It's a real problem. Well, what's the answer? It may seem like a very simplistic answer, but really, you know, if two people differ on something, let's suppose that Keith and I differ on, say, the length of this little remote right here. And Keith says, I believe that that remote is 6 inches. And I say, Keith, I don't know where you've been in all your young life, but I know that thing is 5 inches. And so we can fuss about that if we want to. We can be at one another's throat, or we could do something else. We could go get a ruler, a standard. Say, okay, we're going to settle this, and we're going to put this thing up against a standard and measure it. And if both of us are willing to accept the standard, that's the end of the issue, and then Keith knows that I was right. But anyway. There is a standard for child rearing. It's the book of God. Turn to Psalm 119. You know, when you have children, you know, sometimes older parents, grandparents wonder, why in the world did God give children to young people, because they don't seem like they know anything about what they're doing. And when you get older, you begin to realize all the mistakes you made. You say, I could do a better job, probably. But I also understand why God didn't give children to old people, because sometimes they don't exercise discipline like they ought to. But so here's young people. And so they said, we're going to lay aside what we learned from our family. We're going to forget about what we saw on TV. Please do. Raise your children like on TV, and they might turn out like those Hollywood actors. Is that what you want? And forget about the psychologist books. Most psychologists that talk about child rearing, from what I've read, they don't know anything about it. And forget about all of that. Let's get a standard we can agree on. Look at Psalm 119, 105. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. You ever feel like you're walking in darkness? You say, no, I just don't know what to do. Get the book out. Together as a husband and wife, get the book out. Let's study all the verses in Proverbs about discipline. Let's study examples of parents and children that we want to imitate and those we want to avoid in the Bible. Let's get the book out and try to pattern our thinking on it. Look at verse 130. I mean, we could read every verse in this psalm because it's all talking about the Word of God, but I've just selected a couple. Verse 130. The unfolding of your words gives light. It gives understanding to the simple. Simple here is not the moron, but it's the naive, the untrained. And I say, I am untrained. I've never had children. I'm 20 years old or 25 years old. I need some direction. That's what this book's for. And so I don't know. I'm not saying it would be easy, but if parents would sit down together, I wonder how many parents raising children ever sit down in a Bible study together to talk about God's plan for raising children. Instead of, my mother did, my father did, that kind of thing. Well, I told you we were going to come back to Deuteronomy 10, so let's go back there. Deuteronomy 10. So we've read a number of verses about discipline, its importance, some principles that should be involved in it. But when it's all said and done, since we know that God expects parents, we know that from these verses we read, to discipline their children. What if you fail? Just because you neglect. I don't mean you try and fail, but you just neglect it. It's unpleasant. Chapter 10, verse 12. Now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require from you? but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways, and to love Him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and to keep the Lord's commandments and His statutes, which I'm commanding you today for your good. We can talk about how it interferes with the child's development. We can talk about how it impacts worship. We can talk about how it affects the home. But the bottom line is, if I don't discipline, I disobey God. These are God's commandments. They're not Church of Christ commandments, elders' commandments, grandparents' commandments. God expects parents to learn how and to practice discipline of their children. And the failure to follow God's commandments will impact us possibly in ways that we're not even aware of. And so, God disciplines us for our good. He wants us to partake in righteousness. He wants us to be His children. It could be that some of the difficulties you've faced in life were things that God brought upon you for the purpose of discipline. I don't know. Hebrews seems to indicate that in chapter 12 and the things they were suffering. What I do know about my Heavenly Father, you know, a child, I don't know of a child who was disciplined by loving, godly parents that ever felt bad at them for that, rejected them, later didn't want to be with them. I'm not talking about parents that were abusive and ungodly. We're not talking about that. And I guess because they know Mom and Dad love me. And that's the thing about our Heavenly Father. He may allow us to go through things that seem awfully difficult, but I can never deny His love, because He sent His only begotten Son and led Him down a cross, sent Him to die on a cross, so I can be saved. I can't deny the love of that kind of Father. And so we're going to sing the final song. I believe it's Who Will Follow Jesus.